Welcome to Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football. My name is Wes, and I'd like to invite you to join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news from around the league, make predictions for the upcoming games, and much, much more. And what's up, everybody? It's Wes, and everything's fine, right? Like we just gave up 20 points to Vandy, lost the centerpiece of our offense, and have the toughest portion of our schedule left. But it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's all fine. How are things with you, Jesse?
Things are fine. You know, I think we'll get to it. I'm happy we got a win, but obviously there are some things to clean up. And, you know, some of it is like wrapping up on tackles so that you can't, or you don't have somebody sticking around like a fly on a cow's ass or a gnat on a cow's ass.
Or, yeah, didn't he say like a gnat on a fly's ass the first time or something like that? And I was like,
what? Got mixed up at first.
No, that was the best part. Anyway, Matt, what's going on, man?
You okay? Why are you people here? I'm on vacation, by God. Go away!
Wow, he's already grumpy for Alabama-Tennessee week. Goodness.
Oh, is that this week? Okay, hold on.
All right, wasted no time on that one.
I'm ready.
Okay, good. He's in the spirit now. He's in the spirit now. All right, well, let's talk about the games of last week, and we'll get there.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
All right. Well, the first game we have to talk about from last week, Georgia at Vanderbilt, which was mostly red in the stands, by the way, again, which is usually the case in Nashville these days when Georgia goes there. But Georgia won this one 37-20. I got the point here. But Vandy got the lead early in this one, as we've seen a lot of times against Georgia this year, and scored its first touchdown against Georgia since 2018. So Georgia was in a lot of zone coverage early, and Vandy kind of found those weak spots. And honestly, I didn't really see that change a lot. So I don't know if we were just trying to maybe conserve some energy. I don't know. But definitely didn't see a whole lot of change there, although we did do a little bit better as the game went on. The Georgia offense did get going despite an early ankle injury to Brock Bowers, which we'll talk more about in a second. And got out to a comfortable lead. It was 30-14 in the fourth when Carson Beck threw probably the worst pass I've seen him throw this year. I don't know if there was like a miscommunication between him and the receiver or what, but it basically floated right to the defender. Taylor, who returned it to the one, and that was kind of weird if y'all saw that. Beck made the tackle, and I mean, it was a decent tackle, but Taylor ended up being injured, and I didn't follow up to see he seemed to be favoring his leg. It was really weird. I didn't see anything like that happened on the tackle itself. It must have been internal or something, but nothing bent strangely or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, Vandy scored right after that. Georgia scored again to put the game safely out of reach after that. Dejon Edwards had a career high 146 yards on 20 carries with one touchdown. So that is a highlight at least. However, today, Dogs fans' worst fears were realized, and the news broke that Brock Bowers will have to undergo the tightrope surgery for the ankle sprain and will likely miss 4 to 6 weeks. Some of you may be familiar with this procedure, the same surgery Tua had, and he was out for a month. This is also the same surgery Tennessee's Cedric Tillman had last year. He was out for 4 games. So we'll see. But, you know, tough row of games coming up. We do have a bye week, and that's nice to off the bat. So maybe one less they'll have to miss, but we'll see. Jesse, your thoughts on Vandy, Georgia?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I got a little excited on that first Vandy drive with them going up. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was just in Carson Beck, it seemed like in the Kentucky game, he really showed out the week prior. I mean, he put up what is likely his best performance he'll ever put up with 489 yards, 4 touchdowns, 80% completion rate. Like, that's lights out. But this past weekend, and I don't know if he was sleeping on Vandy or what it was. It was like he regressed. He had a couple costly mistakes, which, I mean, you mentioned some of them, but you know, yes, they did what they had to do to win, but his mistakes were kind of crucial in letting Vandy hang around. Strip sack on the first drive as a result, you know, of holding on to the ball a little too long, and they recovered it in plus territory. And then, you know, they weren't able to capitalize on it, but still had the fumble with the drop snap, which was kind of scooped up. And then you already mentioned the interception. So his final stat line with 261 yards passing, one touchdown and one interception isn't the worst of any quarterback we've seen, and certainly isn't the worst of any Georgia quarterback we've ever seen. But I think those crucial mistakes are something that other teams that aren't Vanderbilt will capitalize on much better than Vanderbilt did. And these slow starts have got to stop. And they do not have their cheat code in Brock Bowers in the next few weeks. So they got to clean it way up.
Yeah, definitely a case of Jekyll and Hyde over the last few weeks. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, again, if I'm a Georgia fan, I'm a little nervous because just like you said, you've lost the centerpiece of your offense. Carson Beck's taken a step back this last week, especially when he came out guns blazing against Kentucky, like Jesse just said. I don't know what to make of it. I didn't have a chance to watch it, Wes. Did they get a bunch of second and third stringers in the fourth quarter? Is that the reason why Vanderbilt was able to score 13?
No, I mean, a lot of these scores were kind of in the still competitive stages of the game. So, yeah,
that's worrying. Again, Georgia, historically speaking, and I'm not a Georgia fan by any stretch, but historically speaking, Georgia's always played up or down depending on who they're playing. And I don't know what the Kentucky game is an aberration, but they're going to play down a little bit. And that's what they did in this game, it looks like. I didn't have a chance to watch this, but you get over 500 yards of total offense. You think you've had a good day, but I don't know. Like you said, Wes, everything's fine.
Yeah,
I guess. I would be a little worried and concerned if I was a Georgia fan, but
I'm not necessarily mad about, I mean, 37 points. I'm not necessarily mad about that, but giving up 20 points to Vandy, that to me is the worrier.
And giving up 13 points late, that's a bit much.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you want to look at it from a certain perspective, it's 13-13 at the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
If you take away that explosion in the second quarter, this game's a lot closer than the score would indicate.
Right.
Yeah. Which is alarming because it's Vanderbilt.
It is. So I don't, like I said, it's only going to get tougher from here. So we'll see after the bye week and then Florida and then Mizzou and on and on and on. All right. Speaking of close games, though, Arkansas at Bama winning this one 24-21. I got the point here. Bama gave up 15 points in the second half after only giving up 13 points in all of the second halves of the rest of the season. So that was a pretty bizarre stat that I saw. It seems like they also dealt with a lot of injuries. I noticed a lot of players going down on the defensive side of the ball for Bama. So that may have played a part as well. And I guess we'll see if that continues to play a part. And then my only other thought kind of about the end of the game is all I have to say is Nick Saban has absolute confidence in his quarterback, letting him throw it when it would have made sense to eat the clock and not risk a late pick in the game. But hey, it worked out. He got the pass off and it was a completion and they got the first down and it did what they needed it to do. But it was a little touch and go there for a little bit. So one other note here, this is Arkansas's fourth loss by one score or less this year. So tough close ones for Arkansas so far. I know I asked you first last time, but since you're the Bama fan, Jesse, what are your thoughts on this one?
Oh, I had a lot of thoughts. Felt really good in that first half. And then slowly started to become more anxious in the second half. The offensive line is still a huge issue. And I don't
put a pin in that. I'm going to talk about it in a second.
Okay. I don't foresee it getting much better. Obviously some of the sacks are Jalen Milroe's fault to an extent. He does hold on to the ball a little bit too long, but the majority of them are the fact that our O-line sucks. They don't make good lanes and holes for our running backs and give them the ability to move. They also, our center, holy cannoli. I mean, I don't know if they just went into freshman bio and found somebody to play that position. But oh my goodness, you mentioned, throwing and passing from Milrow. The deep ball was decent, especially in the first half. A couple of impressive ones. I was really proud of that. I got really anxious every time he did it, but I'm getting a little less triggered, which is good. And then I think what happened in the second half and what continued to happen in these past couple games is Alabama has so many penalties and they are so ill-timed. They are so bad. There was two penalties. We had them on third down, and had we not committed them, we would have been fine. And that's what put them back in the game. One in particular literally gave them the chance to score. They did score. Otherwise, the drive would have been shut down, and you can't do that, especially at home. Come on. And it's just, it's not disciplined. It's so bad. Two seasons ago, we were plagued with the same thing. I don't know what's going on. Our pass rush was better, I thought. KJ Jefferson is huge. We saw that when our guys couldn't take him down.
That was one of the best plays I've ever seen a quarterback make.
It's insane. He's huge. But also, I don't know what the rest of our team was doing. It was like we were just standing there and like, huh, he can't get him down.
Right. Huh. He's like got
standing around just watching. Oh, look at
everybody just stood there. And I was like, what are you? Whoa. Help. Do something. But, you know, kudos to KJ Jefferson. That was probably the best play of the game. That was really cool. I will also say, I do not appreciate the douchebaggery that Jermaine Burton was showing in this game. It was not appreciated. There was no need. It's like after every play, and granted, I don't know what's being said to him, right? Like, I don't know what people are mumbling to each other, but like, stop.
Wasn't he also shushing like the crowd? I'm like, dude, you're at home. You don't want the crowd.
Like, I think when he was doing that, that's where the away section is.
Oh,
that's
was
like
that they
one
were okay.
Sliver where like the band is and like the band.
I did want to point out he also pushed a girl over after the Tennessee loss last year. So
yeah, she oh yeah, it. He has, I think, some anger issues.
Yeah.
Maybe some confidence issues. I think that's a projection of like, yeah, I'm insecure, so I'm just going to project out and overcompensate. But it just, I don't know. It really left a bad taste in my mouth this week. But
that's not new for him.
It's not. Yeah. It really isn't. But I guess this week I just noticed it more because I was like, because he didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he did stuff, but it wasn't like he was constantly like getting connected with. So I don't know. Right. That's just my thoughts.
Right. Matt, your thoughts on this close one between Bama and Arkansas?
Listen, if I'm Sam Pittman, I'm trying to figure out what I need to do. Is there a donation I need to make? Is there a particular, you know, sweater vest God do I need to make a donation to? Like, there's got to be something, because it always seems like Pittman is coming up just that much short every time we get in one of these really close competitive games. He just can't catch a break. Yeah. You know, they start to roll back in the fourth quarter and just he's come up just a hair short. As it seems like it happens a lot to Arkansas, and I feel for our Arkansas listeners, because man, that's rough. That's really rough, especially when you have an athlete like KJ Jefferson. One other name I want to mention here, and I don't have a whole lot else to say past that, is Landon Jackson. 3.5 sacks in this game. Dude was all over the place. He was leading tackler with 11 tackles as well. 7 solo tackles. So he was causing havoc, to say the least. And that sack stat's going to come back into play when we talk about Tennessee Bama this weekend. So put a pin in it. We'll come back to it.
He was lights out. I mean, he did an excellent job. And it's like Coach Saban said the week leading into this game, and I don't think the players took it to heart. Arkansas is better than their 2-4 record showed.
Completely agree.
And just look at what they've lost by.
Exactly. And I don't think our team took that seriously.
Yeah.
I think they do now.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that helps down the road to take other teams more seriously.
Let's hope not. Let's hope.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think they were already taking Tennessee seriously.
One more week.
Let's be honest. I'm pretty sure this one's been circled since last year. So
yeah, that O-line is not getting any better.
Yeah. All right, speaking of Tennessee, Texas A&M at Tennessee. Tennessee won this one 20-13. I got the point. I was the only one to pick Tennessee. What's up with that? That was weird.
I have no faith. I'll be the first to admit I did not have any faith in my boys. I was pleasantly shocked.
Well, I mean, so
the game with Texas A&M, I was like, okay, maybe they could do it.
Yeah, no, I get it. That kind of makes sense. And so, and your fears were still founded, Matt, even as the game went along, because Tennessee gets its first win under Josh Heupel when scoring less than 30 points up to that point. I think they were 0-6. I think.
Oh yes, no, something like that. 0-7. It was a bad stat.
Yeah,
they mentioned during the broadcast. I'm like, why are we talking about this late in the fourth quarter? Let's shut up and work on something else.
Well, now it's not an ofer anymore. But yeah, one of the themes here for both teams was missed opportunities. We saw it all game long, guys. Missed field goals and missed opportunities downfield, throwing it and things like that. D. Williams returned a punt in the third quarter for the Vols that was huge in this game. And then my only other note really about this one was how easily the Vols could run the ball, whereas on the other side, A&M, not so much. So I think that was another major factor in this one. So, Matt, what do you got on Texas A&M at Tennessee?
So I do want to go on record stating that I did not believe in the boys. I thought A&M was going to come in here and win by 2 scores. I think that was what my prediction was. I don't remember exactly, but boy, was I glad to be wrong. When we went into halftime down 3 points, I was like, okay, we might be able to hang with them a little bit, because I was convinced that A&M was going to come out guns a-blazing and throw all over the defense. I could not have been more wrong. Max Johnson has a decent day. He's over 200 yards passing, but 2 really crucial interceptions.
Yeah.
And then the run game is non-existent for A&M. The defense really like ratcheted down and was able to really get after them. They made Max Johnson's job incredibly hard. Especially in that second half, they were in his face constantly. They were running around. They were flying all over the place. Again, 2 big interceptions. I don't remember. Kamal Haddon, who got booed by Tennessee fans after the Florida game. He's had a heck of a turnaround since then. And it's just been, and that big return by D Williams pretty much blew the game open. I was really happy with the crowd. It was checkered. Checker kneeling, so it looked really good on TV. The crowd definitely came out to play. And Josh Heupel in his post-game interview said that he'd like to thank the defense and the crowd, and he was pretty pleased with that. Aside from that, the only real big criticism I have here is Joe Milton is still having issues. He throws another pick in this game on what should have been an easy look-off. I almost said Brent Musburger. Musburger hasn't called a game in a while. Gary Danielson once again showed how much of a horse's patootie is and said, well, he's a 5th-year senior. He shouldn't be making yada yada. And just being Gary Danielson. And he's kind of right. He shouldn't have made that throw, because it was definitely safety was right there in the middle in center field. So I don't know how he missed him, but he missed him. So Joe Milton's again showing some signs of struggle. He's not as lights out as we were hoping. Especially not living up to that preseason hype. But again, when your run game's as good as Tennessee's is, you don't really have to lean on the pass that much. Jalen Wright goes off for 130 plus yards. Jabari Small and Dylan Sampson both look good. Milton had a couple of really hard runs as well, where he showed his grit, put his shoulder into a couple guys. And so I feel pretty good about this win. I'm glad that Tennessee found a way to win this thing. This was a classic situation where if you were looking at previous coaching staffs, Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, probably Jeremy Pruitt, although Pruitt probably wouldn't have been in this game to begin with. But if you look at previous coaches, we lose this game 9 times out of 10 under those previous coaches. Heupel has shown that, yes, there are still some struggles, but we can find ways to win football games. And I'm pretty happy about that. There's been a lot of people calling for Milton to be benched, for Nico to get the start. I don't necessarily agree with that quite yet. I think that it's still his offense to control. And again, as long as we can run the ball like that, you don't have to have a stellar offense, pass offense at least. So still some things to clean up. But man, that defense has looked really good over the last couple of weeks. So kudos to them.
Yeah, getting
just, let me just warn you, as someone who's been there this season, calling for the backup, stick with the devil you know.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Okay. Nico's come in relief a couple of times, and he's looked okay, but he's not looked light years ahead of Joe. So let's pump the brakes on the bench Milton movement, and let's stick with the guy that got us here.
Yeah, stick with the devil you know. I promise it's better. It's better. It's better than the one you might know behind him and the one you might know behind that guy. So, you know.
Yeah.
Just a little sage.
Well, and, you know, for Tennessee fans, when you can win when you're not playing your best as, against a team like A&M, that's a good thing. Jesse, as someone who whose team just played a really close, tough game against A&M, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, and Matt's kind of already mentioned it, and Wes, you did too, is their ability to run the ball. I mean, if you look at the stats the week before, so against Bama, Texas A&M allowed 2.61 yards per carry, which ranked top five nationally. And they had just successfully shut down Alabama's rushing attack the week before. So I think anyone that had concerns over Tennessee's ability to run the ball should be very encouraged by this, because the Aggies, they were just run all over. You already mentioned the stats of Wright and Small. They continually bit off chunk by chunk by chunk to help make up for the, you know, the lack of passing yards, and it was effective. So that's my biggest takeaway here. And what I'm hoping is also going to be a big takeaway for the Crimson Tide.
They're going to put eight in the box. They're going to run eight in the box with everybody's on an island.
Oh, Lord. Yep.
By the way, something else that we probably want to mention here, and Jesse, you'll probably appreciate this because I know how much you love Jimbo. That is his eighth straight road loss.
That's eight. Right. They were talking about the road straight. Struggles.
Not getting it done. It's not a good look, Jimbo.
I'm not going to lie. On Friday, when I was flying out, I was flying from Philadelphia to Atlanta, and I had a like 6:45 a.m. flight. So very, very early. I was sitting there drinking coffee, and I could hear these gentlemen at the table next to me, and they're all talking college football. I think they were actually headed to the Notre Dame game. And they were talking, and they mentioned Jimbo Fisher, and they're like, surely he's got to be out. I mean, come on. And I'm just like telling myself not to interject because it's not my business. I'm also very tired and don't want to argue with people about Jimbo Fisher at 5 a.m. But it's like, honestly, dudes, you would think, but not so fast, my friends, because they spent a lot of money on him. And I don't know what the contract looks like for our little offensive coordinator friend either.
Right.
Ooh, I
did. Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to put this into food terms, it would be kind of like paying top dollar filet mignon prices for like a very middle of the road like cheeseburger. You know what I mean?
You ordered filet mignon and you were like, I want it medium. I want it like medium rare even. And it comes to your table and it's well done. And they
is a war crime. That is a war crime. And yes, it should not happen.
It really is.
And they're like, would you like A1 with it? And you're just like,
Oh, no.
And when I say cheeseburger, I don't mean like a McDonald's cheeseburger. I'm not trying to shortchange it. Granted, Jimbo has won some games, right? But if we look at the stats, very average, especially if you compare it to, you know, his predecessor who they got out of there.
Their numbers are the exact same, right?
Very close.
At the end of last season, I think the numbers are, there might be one or two more wins under Jimbo, and they're paying him a lot more than they ever paid Kevin Sumlin.
I think we did an episode last year, the title of which was Kevin Sumlin, You Up?
That might be something that they want to resurface.
Yeah. All right, let's move to Florida at South Carolina. Florida winning this one 41-39. What a barn burner. Matt, only one to pick Florida here. So, I mean,
I only picked Florida because I knew that Beamer Ball was due a letdown. And here it is, kids.
A letdown. It's still super close. I mean, back and forth the whole time. And honestly, as I'm watching this game, I thought that Joshua Simon catch where he just trucked the Florida player, ran for a touchdown. I thought, oh, that's it. That's the difference maker. That's going to set the tone for the rest of the game, and the Gamecocks are going to win. Nope, Florida marched right back down the field with a crazy drive of their own which included a tipped ball to their own player, kind of like the prayer at Jordan Hare style stuff. And then they scored to go ahead. And there was still drama. It wasn't done then. They still ran, you know, the little play at the end to try to run timeout and took the safety. And I still don't understand why he stepped out on the back because he still had time. I don't understand why he didn't just keep running, and they might have actually ran the clock out. Anyway, took the safety, did the safety kick, and then, you know, Carolina tried to do their little flip the ball back and forth, and that didn't really work. So that was all she wrote for that one. Jesse, your thoughts on this wild game?
Honestly, a wild game. I mean, the moment you think the momentum is shifting, it's just, it's back on the other side. If you're someone that likes offense, this is a game for you. I mean, offense.
Look at those stats for those two QBs, man. It's crazy.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that's like the one thing I wrote down. Graham Mertz, obviously for the Gators, Spencer Rattler for the Gamecocks, combined 736 yards and 7 touchdowns passing. Oh my goodness. Just offense out the wazoo. It was insane to watch. I think anybody in the Florida faithful that may have had some concerns about Mertz, this game lightened their spirits a little bit because he was in control. It was lights out passing for him. And then the same for Spencer Rattler, although I had to think the entire time, especially on, you know, as the clock started winding down and they're trying to make these kind of last ditch efforts, is I think Spencer Rattler put so much into it. He's just all in. And I feel bad that he doesn't necessarily have all of the weapons around him to make him successful because he really does leave it all on the field. And y'all know I was not a Rattler fan before, and I don't necessarily think I am now, but I do think he truly puts everything in it for his team. And these two quarterbacks were insanely impressive on Saturday. And it's got to feel good for Florida to get a good big road win. I loved watching this game as someone who's not a fan of either.
Matt, your thoughts?
Like I said, I was expecting Beamer to have a letdown, and we got it. Again, both quarterbacks played really good. I am curious if Spencer Rattler could do it all over again. Do you think he stays at Oklahoma?
No,
I don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't think so?
No, they booed him.
They did.
Tennessee's booed people. We boo people.
They lost. I think they lost all faith in him, and he got replaced. I don't think. And with everything with the coaching situation and all, I don't see him staying there.
Very volatile situation.
The fact of the matter is that Rattler's come in and looked really good when he has a chance to. It's a shame, and this is no disrespect to Carolina fans, it's a shame that he doesn't have better weapons to chunk it to. If he had another couple of really good wide receivers, he would be – probably in Heisman contention, and Carolina would probably be better than 2-4. I'm wondering at this point if Beamer seat's a little toasty. 2-4 in this season after coming out of last season with so much hype. You got to be wondering at what point do people start barking at him, no pun intended, and start saying, hey, we need to do something better. We got to figure something out. And again, Florida's 5-2 and unranked. That's interesting. I find that kind of curious. Good game for both teams. Just came up a little short for Carolina. By the way, the post-game presser with Shane Beamer talking about what went wrong in this game was comedic gold. He's shuffling through papers. He's like looking through things. Like he gives me such – I said it last year. And I'll continue to say it. He gives me so much Butch Jones energy. It's not even funny.
He gets like that with the post game. I mean, it makes me think of after the Georgia game where he's like, you know, just spouting off all this stuff and like, gosh, man, like looking around. Yeah, I think there's like a fly buzzing around his head at some point. And he's like, you know, I don't know. It's definitely a fun vibe on the interviews.
But by the way, another name here that I kind of wanted to mention is Ricky Pearsall. 166 yards on 10 catches. I mean, kid had himself a day. And I just wonder, I'm looking at the stats for previous to this game. The most yards he's had in a previous game was against Charlotte. He had 99 yards and 7 catches. Mm-hmm. So they might have found a new weapon with him. They may need to go to him a little bit more. And it wasn't like he was getting all of this in one shot. His longest catch of the night was 26 yards. So, I mean, he was dinking and dunking. So, I mean, I would probably throw it to that kid a little bit more.
And I saw somebody post a few days ago that Graham Mertz, his stats are very similar to Jordan Travis, a Heisman contender. So obviously they've got, you know, losses to deal with, and that for some odd reason plays a part in the Heisman, but it's not, you know.
As the Heisman's a stupid award that has zero value unless you're in the Big Ten or the Big 12 or the Pac-2.
I knew I could count on you on that. I set you up there. So
stupid award. I hate it. It's dumb. It's low down. It's dirty. Whatever.
Oh, wow. I was going to say we're getting there ahead of time. All right. Next, Missouri at Kentucky.
Jesse ran away.
Let's see.
Look how tiny she is.
I know. This is really a funny little.
Okay, that was
little tiny little hilarious. Jesse in the corner of the screen over there.
I need more of this.
Missouri at Kentucky. Mizzou winning this one 38-21. Jesse's the only one to pick Mizzou here. This one was kind of wild. I mean, again, Mizzou was down 14-0 and sputtering on offense when they get a bomb touchdown thrown by the punter. So that kind of
Oh, wait, wrong team. Sorry.
It seemed to kind of loosen them up a little bit, and they kind of never let up after that. They outscored the Wildcats the remainder of the game 38-7. So from then on to win in decisive fashion. And get this, Mizzou is bowl eligible halfway through October. And when asked about it in his post game, Drinky said, "Let's not stop here. Let's keep going." So, hey, you never know. A little other side note here. I'm not really sure what Mark Stoops is going to be able to say to the boosters about extra donations after that one, because I feel like at best Mizzou is very comparable to Kentucky. So, not sure what he's going to say about that one. Matt, what are your thoughts on this game here?
6-1 Missouri halfway through October is not something I had on my bingo card. Just so we're all clear on that. I did not anticipate this team to come out looking like they have. They're 6-1 and still unranked. What is happening? It makes no sense. Not to mention Air Force is undefeated and they're still in the lower 25. But anyway, where'd Kentucky go? Where'd their run? I mean, really, like, we couldn't get this thing going. Like, you score two times in the first quarter, and then that's pretty much all you do the rest of the day. Like, Stoops, you got to get them rolling. I'm even wearing Kentucky blue, for God's sake. Really, it's just my cruising shirt, just so we're clear on that. not condoning Kentucky at all. Just to be clear, I don't want the Tennessee people coming after me calling me a turncoat. But wow, Drinky's managed to put this thing together, and I guess we're gonna have to wait and see how it all's gonna hang out. Because gracious, they've done what they needed to. I mean, aside from the singular loss, which was to LSU and a close one, it's only 10 points. And then they get South Carolina. Like, it's just, we could be potentially looking at an undefeated Georgia versus a 7-1 Mizzou game.
Yeah.
At the beginning of November. Like, it's psychotic. I don't understand it. I don't really care for it personally. But man, what a nutso story out of the SEC this year.
Yeah, no kidding. Jesse, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this one was, it started out, you know, kind of fun to watch. You're like, whoa, what's happening? But if you look at the stat lines here, they are mostly the same or very, very close as far as total offense goes. Same number of first downs, time of possession is very close. The one that's a little bit different is the turnovers. Mizzou had one, Kentucky had three, two of which were interceptions thrown by Devin Leary. That's a problem. When you lose the turnover battle, you typically lose the game. And it just makes me question Devin Leary a little bit. He was seen as going to be the savior of, you know, Kentucky football. He was going to fit in perfectly with the offensive coordinator. I even thought that, but I'm not sure what's going on. I don't know how you get this team moving and going and get the passing game to step it up. I mean, Ray Davis still had a great day. He rushed 18 times for 117 yards, caught two passes for 11 yards and a score. So he still had a great day, but it's just the fact that for the most part, Devin Leary didn't look great. He was just 14 of 27, had 120 yards and two interceptions. So it looked like Ray Davis was really the only kind of offense that Kentucky was going to get. And if you shut that down, you lose. I mean, you have to be a little bit more diverse than that. And I think that's Kentucky's issue. They're not a diverse offense. They were hoping to be with Devin Leary and with this new offensive coordinator, but we're just not seeing that. And that's going to have to be rectified for Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky's quarterback play kind of reminds me of Tennessee's a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like you get flashes of brilliance and then it's just kind of middling. And I think it's probably more of the same issue. It's just you don't really have to develop the pass game. We can lean on the run game. But in this case, it came back to bite Kentucky in the rear end pretty hard, too.
Yeah. Oh, and breaking news, Devin Leary to start putting mayo in his coffee. So
and listen, if that'll make him work a little bit better, then I don't see a problem with
whatever
it.
Whatever it takes. Not like bourbon in the coffee. I don't know.
That might be a bridge too far. Why not peanut butter? Let's try peanut butter in coffee.
That's right.
And see what happens there.
Still get
the whatever that creatine stuff.
Right.
Butter. Let's try apple butter. I bet apple butter and coffee would probably work.
Probably wouldn't be half bad, yeah.
I'm thinking whiskey.
It would probably be awful.
Have a reverse. Yeah.
It'd probably be better than mayo anyway. all right. Next was Auburn at LSU. LSU winning this one in decisive fashion, 48-18. Jesse gets the point here. I think this one went about as we expected. LSU's offense was as advertised. And Auburn still just not quite there yet to be able to stand up to a team like LSU on the road at this point in Freeze's tenure. I forget who went first last time. Jesse, what are your thoughts on Auburn at LSU?
I mean, Auburn just has not been able to put together a really impressive road appearance. It's like they get stage fright when they're not in Jordan-Hare. And that was showcased on Saturday. And again, Jaden Daniels, like, come on. With his legs, he tallied 93 yards. However, he was still able to tack on and extend plays, you know, and through the air, he finished 20 for 27 for 325 yards, three touchdowns. He did have an interception, but Auburn didn't stand a chance, honestly. And, you know, playing in Death Valley is always hard, but Jaden Daniels is truly a quarterback to watch, and Auburn has got to put together some moxie and some presence and some poise on the road, or they are not going to get it done.
Yeah, this game was pretty much done at halftime, and Brian Kelly in his halftime interview, you could even tell that he was just like, yeah, we're going to have to play the rest of the game. It was pretty much all he said. Matt, your thoughts?
Again, Jaden Daniels is a name that stands off the page when you look at the box score. 325 yards is a lot. Not to mention so I guess with the rushing, there goes Jesse again. She's disappeared into that guy's pants. with his rushing, he's over 400 yards. So, I mean, he had a heck of a game. And again, Jaden Daniels continues to show he's a great quarterback. He can get things done. That extension of plays, he's playing like I wish Joe Milton would play. But I digress. So again, good home win for LSU. Auburn, I don't know what's going on with Hugh Freeze. They were my dark horse to make some people, you know, stand up and take account this year, and it's not worked out. It just hasn't.
Kentucky, you know, was mine. Has worked out either. Makes it feel better.
Well, it's a down year in everybody's conference, apparently. But 0-3 in the conference is a bit alarming. I was anticipating them to be a little bit more competitive. And it doesn't get any easier from here. So the rebuild in on the Plains might take a little bit longer than we originally intended.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for last week's games. Current pick 'em standings. I got 26. Matt has 23. Jesse has 14. Still a lot of time left. So after all that in summary, let's get to a quick opinion segment.
Sir, if I may venture an opinion.
I'm not really interested in your opinion, 3PO.
Yeah, well,
you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
All right. So, and I think this is valid. It's a question that needs to be asked. But is Georgia's quest for a three-peat doomed with Bowers out and some of the toughest games of the season looming? Jesse, let's start with you. What are you going to say? Are you saying it's done? They're doomed, or is there some hope there?
I didn't think Georgia was going to three-peat with Bowers. To be honest,
it's tough.
But now, especially, no. But Georgia has continually started slow and has had to pick it up, you know, in the second half. And they've made a couple mistakes. Carson Beck, you saw this past week, couple of mistakes. And without Bowers, I think those only get worse. I think when you start to get into the playoffs and you're playing teams that aren't in the conference, unfortunately, a lot of those out-of-conference teams look pretty darn good this year, and they're going to catch Georgia sleeping. Someone is going to catch Georgia sleeping, and they are going to exploit it. And without Bowers as a cheat code to make up for it, like, you no longer are in that situation in The Sims where you're like, man, I'd have this, like, job as a, you know, science experiment test subject, and I'm making no money. I can't afford to build this house. Let me put in the cheat code Rosebud. Da, 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 da. I have millions of dollars. Okay, you don't have that. Brock Bowers went bye-bye. Your Rosebud cheat code is gone. And they gonna catch you sleeping.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I was just going through the and I went to GeorgiaDogs.com.
Your algorithm.
It did. My algorithm's completely jacked up now. And I was just looking at who as far as team stats go, who the leading receiver is. Obviously, it's Brock Bowers. He's got 567 yards in 7 games. The number 2 guy, and I'm going to butcher this name, Wes, so feel free to step in. It's Marcus Rosemy Jacksaint. Is that how you say
you
that?
You got it exactly right.
Ooh, okay, I'm good at it. All right. So Bowers has 567 yards. The next closest receiver has a little over 300, so 333 yards. So there's a bit of a drop off as far as production goes. Number of touchdowns, Bowers has 4 on the year. Everybody else, you got to combine 2, 3, and 4. I'm sorry, 2, 3, and 4 to get the same number of touchdowns that Bowers has gotten. So it's any time in college football, it's the question is, who's the next guy up? Well, when you look at the receiving core in UGA, you do have a couple people there, but man, Bowers is the end-all, be-all here.
And he can block.
And he can, and he's really good at it. And that's the other part of the issue you're going to run into as well. So look at UGA to start leaning on the run game a little bit more, but without that key block on the edge, it could get kind of iffy. Do I think Georgia will three-peat? I'm with Jesse on this one. I didn't think they were going to three-peat to begin with. They've got a lot of tough sledding still ahead of them. Not to mention the fact that when you do get into the playoff, Ohio State, although we dog them a lot, has looked decent. You're also going to have to worry about Texas and Oklahoma and all the other Washington's come out of nowhere. So again, you're going to have to worry about those out-of-state conference or out-of-conference games as well once you get into the playoffs. So Bowers is going to have to come back. But here's the other problem. If Bowers is out 4 to 6 weeks, let's go ahead and pretend it's going to be 6. If he's out 6 weeks, does he even bother coming back? Because, again, you got to worry about that NFL money, and he's already the number – he's probably easy round one pick, if not a top 5 pick. He might decide in his own best interest to go ahead and declare for the draft and call it a night.
Yeah,
I don't really see that. Screw the pooch. No,
I don't see that happening. But hey, that's valid. You don't know.
That is something you're going to have to keep an eye out for. So no, I don't. I don't think George is going to be able to pull this one off. But again,
to be fair, nobody. I mean, for the most part, nobody does a three-peat. It's so slim. Like, the chances of anybody, even if they are lights out, it's really, really hard.
Who was the last one? Did we ever?
Wasn't it like? I thought it was like Minnesota from like the 40s or something like that for the three-peat.
Yeah.
And repeats aren't that common. So, I mean, I don't know. I I think I'm going to make it a clean sweep. I'm going to say yes. I think they are kind of done this season. Now, like you said, I think we may have been as well, just because we haven't looked up to par when we compare the last two seasons with this team. Now they still, I think, are capable of greatness, but we've also seen some issues as well. But yeah, I'm going to say yes. I think the only thing that could change that is if guys like Oscar Delp, big tight end that we've got, who obviously takes a back seat to Bowers most of the time, if he can kind of step up, Ladd McConkey's another one. And we had a whole host of receivers that could step up and pick up some of that slack. And let's not forget that Georgia has Mizzou's top receiver from last year, Dominic Lovett, as well as Mississippi State's one of their top receivers in the air raid system last year, in Ra-Ra Thomas. I mean, there's a lot of really quality wide receivers in the receiving core. It's just a matter of, are guys going to step up? I think the firepower is there to get it done, but, you know, thus far they haven't really shown that they're going to step up and take over games in quite the same way that Bauer has. So.
Correct. It's Minnesota was the last to three-peat, and they did it in 1934, 35, and 36.
Yeah. And I think we all remember those games. So,
great, great time for those.
You also have to remember that this was back in the day when you played your schedule, and then you may get a bowl game. Maybe get a bowl game. You sure as heck weren't playing the top teams in the nation in the playoff. Like, that wasn't a thing. So that makes it that much harder, I think.
So guys are going to have to step up, or they can kiss it goodbye. So we'll see. I'm making a clean sweep with all three of us saying they're done. So we'll see, though. All right. We did have a few listener feedback segments or comments from this week, and let's go ahead and talk about those.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right, so when we posted the AP poll, we usually get some reactions there. And Chris had this to say this week about this week's AP poll. Alabama, the perpetual number 11. I'm okay with it, though, if Bama wins out. The new AP toys will probably peter out. If they don't, fair enough, they deserve it. What are y'all's thoughts on that? I mean, I kind of tend to agree with them. If Bama wins out, we're going to probably see a lot of those teams kind of go by the wayside, especially once you start getting into like conference championships and things like that. What do y'all think?
I'm still surprised that there was like no movement on Oregon, but I guess because it came down literally to the last second, that poor
right.
Good gracious.
Mm-hmm. They moved down a spot. Them and Texas switched.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe I thought they would move a little bit more, but I don't think that Alabama necessarily, I think if we would have kept the lead that we had at halftime, we would have moved into the top 10, but because we let that slip away, I think we deserve to stay at 11.
Yeah. And also you got to think about if Bama does win out, they will have beaten some other top teams, although still up in the air about the East. So that would be kind of weird. You might be playing I guess they wouldn't be unranked at that point, but a lower ranked team from the East. So we'll see. And then Matt, did you have anything else? Did you have anything on that one?
No. I feel like when you look at who's around them, Oregon State's got one loss. Ole Miss has one loss. Carolina's undefeated. I really feel like Carolina should probably be in front of both Oregon and Texas. But Bama being at 11 is really not a big deal. Tennessee being at 17 kind of hurts my feelings a little bit, but that's typical for the AP. So,
and also in 2 weeks, it won't matter, right? Actually, in week one, it doesn't matter now. It's just a feel good, click driven stat. So, yep. All right, let's get to the next one. Janet says, Will Reichert for Heisman, all-time leading scorer in the SEC, just passed Daniel Carlson, Auburn's kicker, for I forget how many points. It's a lot. So
it's so many.
Yeah, Jesse, you want to speak to that real quick? Obviously, it just happened, so good for Will Reichert. So.
I mean, our Lord and Savior, Will Reichert. He is so good. He's so composed and poised, and it really is amazing to see an Alabama kicker now be the leading scorer in the SEC, considering that years ago, not too long ago, that was not possible. But Will really does do a great job. And he also was a hell of a punter when Burnup went out against A&M. So,
Matt, do you have anything to say about Alabama kickers?
I mean, kudos to them. But yeah. Again, you know how I'm not. Nope. I was going to make a very rude comment about Alabama's kicking game, but not this week.
Oh, yeah. Also, and I somehow skipped over this, but that was Saban's 200th win, right, at Bama. So another milestone there, kind of a twofer. So good for them. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the upcoming games.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
All right. So there's several teams on a bye this week, as we've seen a few having a bye. It's about that time in the season. But the first game is upcoming. Mississippi State 3-3, 0-3 in the SEC at Arkansas 2-5, 0-4 in the SEC. That's noon on ESPN. Matt, what is your prediction for Mississippi State at Arkansas?
I think Arkansas is finally going to right the ship here. I think Arkansas is been in games. I think this is one they're going to pull away. So I'm going to say Arkansas wins this thing 30-21.
Okay. One of these teams will have a conference win when all is said and done here. I guess if we had to pick a dumpster fire game of the week, it might be this one when we got some offers in the conference going at each other. Both teams have won, just not in the conference. Yeah, it's I do have a little bit more confidence in Arkansas. I think I'm going to go, let's see. I actually didn't write it down as I thought I did. So I'm just doing it on the fly here. I'm going to go Arkansas closer one, 28-24. Jesse, what you got?
That was my initial.
Yeah, one. I'm going to continue the streak. I'm sticking with the Razorbacks in this one. I think they got a little taste of what victory could be this past week, and they really want to finish it out. I also think they're just probably a more well-oiled team than Mississippi State is at this point, and they're at home. So I'm going to pick the Razorbacks 28-21.
Okay.
By the way, you can get tickets to this game for $34.
Oh, nice.
So there's that.
Good Woo pig. Family. That's awesome. Come on out.
Bring the kids.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, next is number 17, Tennessee, 5-1, 2-1 in the SEC at number 11, Alabama, 6-1, 4-0 in the SEC, 3:30 on CBS. Matt, how are you feeling about the Vols in Tuscaloosa? That look says it all.
I here's the thing. Last 2 weeks I've picked against them and they've won. And I'm scared to pick them now. Oh God, dude, Jesse, go ahead. I have to ruminate.
Oh my,
I'm fine if you pick against them. I would just like to say, I hate Tennessee. I don't like their colors. It's that inside of a pumpkin puke orange that you can't sit with.
I don't say anything rude about Bama when it's Bama Tennessee week.
I do like dogs. I think Smokey is very cute. That's the nicest thing I have to say. But in all actuality, in this game, I am extraordinarily nervous. Last year was the worst ever. It was deflating and terrible. But I think and I hope, despite the fact that we lost a lot of people from that team, that the taste of defeat and hatred is fresh on everyone's palates. So I'm hoping at Bryant-Denny we can get it done, but I think it's going to be a close one. I think these teams are really going to fight it out. They always do. So I am going to pick the Tide in this one, but it's going to be a very, very close one. It's going to provide a lot of heart arrhythmias and anxiety, but picking the Crimson Tide 31-28.
Matt, are you ready?
Yeah, I guess I can go ahead and get my spiel. Interesting little stat for this. I saw this earlier. I can't remember where I saw it, so I can't reference it. But Bama is the worst team. The worst team at stopping the sack this season thus far. They are ranked dead last in the SEC. Tennessee, on the flip side of that, is one of the most successful teams for tackles for losses and for sacks. I think that's going to come into play. I'm going to pick Tennessee, and I hope to God the way it's been working doesn't work against me here, but I'm going to pick UT. Bama's favored because this is at Bryant-Denny. But I think Tennessee is going to win this thing. I think Tennessee wins 35-28.
Ooh.
I hope.
In fairness, I think you have picked Tennessee before and they have won. So I don't think it's, you know, it's a be all end all type of thing.
But the trend of the last couple of weeks though, Wes.
Right. I got you. Yeah, this one's difficult for me to pick too. I feel like both teams taking steps back from last year. Both of the teams have. I feel like Bama took more steps back than Tennessee initially, especially at the beginning of the year. So I feel like Bama has improved as the year has gone along. So from that standpoint, I'm going to say Bama's going to win this one 28-21. The Bama fans storm the field. They take the goalposts down, and they throw them in the river, and they rip up the field sod, and they sell it on eBay.
Look at Jesse's face. Look at Jesse's face right here.
Oh, man. Yeah. Jesse
would. Absolutely not.
Jesse would be like shouting up. She would drive there and tell people to stop.
I really would. I would be so incredibly embarrassed.
I would laugh so hard. I don't want that to happen.
It is very hard to get to the Black Warrior River from Bryant-Denny, especially with the post. It's not easy.
True.
I did not know that there was even a river in Tuscaloosa.
Oh yeah. Alabama campus.
I've learned something.
Yeah. Alabama's campus backs up to a river, and then on the other side, a train track. So it's literally sandwiched in, and it's very hard to expand.
Hate that for you.
Yeah.
That's why we've taken the old insane asylum and made it into classrooms.
There you go. I guess you could do it like long ways too, right? a really long and wide campus.
There's probably some sort of rule against being taller than the chimes or something, I'm sure.
Yeah, there you go. Something.
Yeah, I don't think anything is.
All right. Well, yeah, that's going to be a good one to watch this weekend. Next, South Carolina at 2-4, 1-3 in the SEC at number 20, Mizzou. 6-1, 2-1 in the SEC. That's 3:30 on SEC Network. Matt, your prediction for South Carolina at Mizzou.
You see it. Jesse saw it. I'm doing it. It's going to happen. I'm picking the upset. South Carolina finally gets their act together. Beamer gets his signature win for the season.
Okay.
Beat Missouri 33-30.
Okay. I like, in a really roundabout, weird way, I love the logic on that. So,
I mean, I get it.
By the way, that 33 will be in the expiring moments of that game. Special teams will once again result in a win for Beamer.
Okay. I think I'm going to take a little more conventional direction. Mizzou's rolling. I just don't see South Carolina giving them enough of a fight, especially on the road. Mizzou's just an odd place to play. It's tough. I'm going to go Mizzou 35 to 28. Jesse?
I mean, in a place that is known for a toughness Tuesday, it's got to be tough.
They will have an actual circle of wagons in the middle of the field.
Outside. I too am going to pick the Tigers in this one. I just don't know that South Carolina has enough to get it done. And I don't know why, because I would have at the beginning of the season thought that these two teams would be either opposite or in very similar places. And I don't know what's happening in the East. I don't pretend to know. So I'm going to pick Mizzou 31-24.
All right. Next, number 13, Ole Miss 5-1. 2-1 in the SEC at Auburn, 3-3, 0-3 in the SEC. 7:00 on ESPN. Matt, your prediction.
I really wish I could pick Auburn here because it's at home, but man, Auburn just hasn't done anything to really impress me this season. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Ole Miss. It's going to be 35-20.
Okay. Yeah, Auburn is tough at home. Just ask Georgia. Ole Miss wins here, but expect Auburn's defense to keep things close. I'm going to go Ole Miss 31-24. Jesse?
Yeah, I just don't think this Auburn team has enough to get it done, even though it is in Jordan-Hare and it is a night game. I think that Mizzou's offense is just going to stick it to him. So I am going to pick the Rebels 35-17.
Okay. And then the final game, Army at 2-4 at number 19, LSU 5-2, 7:30 on SEC Network. Matt, what you got?
Army? Why are we playing Army in October? What are we doing? Weird. Is this LSU's homecoming? Like, I just...
Probably.
Yeah. To quote Lee Corso, forget about it. The LSU 42-14.
Yeah, and this will be a blowout to cap off the evening. I've got LSU 45-14. Jesse?
Yeah, they pulled Jaden Daniels early in this one. A lot of guys that haven't gotten a lot of playing time get some playing time here. So I'm going to pick the Tigers 42-17. And just remember, y'all, don't hurt America's heroes too badly.
Yes. Let's avoid that. So that does it for the upcoming games. Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt all enjoy a bye week this week. So a lot of people getting some rest about halfway through the season. So
Jimbo's probably looking for a new job.
Oh gosh, yeah, he's dragging his Christmas tree out to the road. the situation in the East. So let's just kind of cap both conference or both divisions here. Situation in the East is pretty wide open. You got Florida, Missouri, and Tennessee. They all only have one conference loss so far, and all of them will play Georgia at some point, giving them the opportunity for that head-to-head advantage. So the East is just all kinds of out of control right now. Situation in the West, unless Bama drops two conference losses from here on out, it's really going to depend on that game between them and LSU that's coming up. So that is the divisions as they stand right now. So all right, well, exciting games coming up. Really appreciate everyone listening to us. If you'd like to contact us, please hit us up on email at pigskinsandpageantry@gmail.com. we are at pigskinsandpageantry on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. We are at PPSEC podcast on X, and we are available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, and most podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review. We'd appreciate 5 stars. That would be awesome. Matt is ready to go back on vacation already. He's like, I'm out, guys. See you later. But until next time, this is Wes. Go Dogs.
Y'all remember, they low down, they dirty, and they some snitches. It's Tennessee Hate Week, y'all. Do it right. Roll Tide.
Let's get something clear right off the bat. Friends don't let friends pull for Bama. Go Vols.